Yes. Oh, you made it a time trial.
I shouldn't have, but I didn't know how to save energy out of the corners. I didn't know you could freewheel on descents. I was just like, yeah, I was on the gas for the whole thing.
Sounds horrific.
It was pretty horrific. So you obviously made that transition from Zwift Academy into World Tour. But for somebody who's like listening to this and they haven't made that transition yet, like Ella from 2017, like what are the big changes that you've made since you stepped up to World Tour? Is it training? Is it recovery? Is it, you know, bike handling? Or is it just being around, you know, an amazing group of girls? What's bringing your level up? Because undoubtedly, year on year, your level is on the up.
Yeah, when I think back to the power that I was doing in the Zwift Academy, I'm definitely putting out a lot more now. All my numbers have gone up a lot. And I think that's just because I've learned a lot about the sport. I know a lot more about nutrition, recovery, what I should be doing like on and off the bike, and also just having a really good coach as well, being able to train quite specifically. And I know how to execute the sessions properly, and my training's just a whole lot harder, and I'm doing a lot more training now than compared to when I was doing the Zwift Academy. It's just gone up a notch. And also I think that as you get more involved in the sport and you get to a higher level, then you start to become aware of the smaller things, like the marginal gains, and almost the flow-on effect if you do certain things. Like if you don't have a good night's sleep, then that might affect your training session the next day. And also just like fueling properly. And if you have like a shit breakfast or you don't have a great dinner, then you might notice that effect the next day. And also just like being able to really nail the training specifics. Like if you have an important session coming up in a couple of days' time and you have a few endurance rides before that, then it's about making sure that you actually follow the brief and don't go too hard in the days prior. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to hit that key session. And I think it's just learning about the smaller details, really, and just about how to get the best out of myself just on and off the bike through, yeah, nutrition and also like stretching and biomechanics and that sort of thing, because I'm a bit beaten up at the moment, so I need to do lots of physio and make sure that I'm nicely prepared to go on the bike.
And have you played around much with wearables like Whoop or Aura Ring or Super Sapiens or any of these devices?
Yeah, from the team we use Super Sapiens, and also we use the core sensors, so we can monitor like our body temperature, our core body temperature. But yeah, I've used the Super Sapiens quite a bit, and I really like that one. It's hard though, because you monitor it for a while, and you can see obviously your blood sugar, glucose, or whatever they call it, levels, and you almost get a picture of what's normal for you, and you can start to see the patterns. But I don't quite have enough knowledge yet to know whether those patterns are actually good. Because you might see what's normal for you, but that normal isn't necessarily the level that your blood sugar should actually be at for certain training. Because I'm often quite low, but that low seems to be normal, but that's probably not necessarily a good thing. So yeah, it's also about fine-tuning using devices like that. I would like a Whoop though.
But I'd almost put them all in the same category. Like I have played around, obviously, with the podcast. Companies send out a lot of stuff to try out and talk about on the podcast. And I'm talking in a couple of weeks with one of the founders of Super Sapien. So I'm really interested to hear, you know, his opinion on it. But I have the Aura Ring and Super Sapiens at the moment. And it's so much data, which it's brilliant to help us make informed decisions, but it's almost like paralysis by analysis. If you're to look at this data and say I have we'll take a traditional 2x20 threshold session to do today, and I wake up and I've X change in my heart rate variability, but then I'm looking at my step count, my sleep quality, my blood sugar levels. It's like just a lot of data, and to take that data and to bring it out the far side to make it useful. Do I change that 2x20 threshold session to 2x20 sweet spot? Do I change it to 2x15 a threshold, or do I just make it an endurance ride? You know, it's difficult to know how to mold that data to make an informed decision on the far side.
Exactly. And I think too much is not necessarily a good thing either, because you might have this data and it might be telling you that actually you shouldn't be riding well today because your Whoop score or whatever is really bad and you haven't had enough sleep, so it's telling you that today's not the best day to train. But then you might get out on the bike without knowing this and feel okay, but then you might have this placebo effect where you've seen the data and you're like, oh, I'm going to be bad today. So then you get out on the bike and then mentally you've almost told yourself that you're going to be bad, so you don't get the session done. So I think because of that, I don't like to know too much because I think that it might trigger me to maybe not complete a session because I might get it in my head that I'm going to be bad anyway. So I like to try and avoid too much because I think too much might not be such a good thing.
How responsible are you for your own nutrition? Like, you're living in Girona, you're surrounded by, you know, potato bravas, beers and tapas all day long. Are you having to go out, do your own shop, prepare your own meals, or is the team giving you specific instructions or dropping off packets of food, or how does the nutrition work?
Oh no, we're completely on our own. Yeah. When we're not with the team, we just, yeah, do whatever we like. So yeah, we don't really have like a team nutritionist or anything. We just, yeah, do as we please.
It seems like that's an area that there's still, you know, world tours, this constant search for marginal gains. And I know years ago friends that were on Team Sky with Bradley Wiggins, and they were saying for 2012, every single meal was dropped off, weighed, you know, all the micro and macronutrients balance dropped off to his front door. It's like, ding dong, here's breakfast, Bradley. Ding dong, here's lunch. I don't know if it's going to get to that on, you know, across the whole world tour, because it seems crazy amount of resources needed. But I'm wondering, is there a point where it's going to be like, here's your box of groceries and here's a list of recipes. Here's your meals you should be making for, you know, breakfast, dinner and lunch.
Yeah, to be honest, maybe it's like that on the men's side of things. And I'm not entirely sure what it's like on other women's World Tour teams. But I think for the most part, there doesn't seem to be so much of an emphasis on constant nutrition, like daily nutrition, and keeping in touch with a nutritionist. I mean, I'm not speaking for all World Tour teams. I'm sure other World Tour teams might have something in place, but we don't really have anything in place. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or people listening to this might be like, what? They don't actually have a team nutritionist? I don't know if I should be saying this, but yeah, we don't. We just do what we like, and we probably get to a race and maybe we're judged if we look a bit fat, but no one really tells us if we should have any like dietary goals or weight goals. And to be honest, I don't really think there's so much of an emphasis on that in women's cycling anyway. I think times are changing and weight's not the be-all end-all. I know in men's cycling it still seems to be quite prominent, especially when you see some of the men, like the Grand Tour riders, they definitely look like they're on quite a restrictive diet. But I think culture's definitely changing and ideas surrounding nutrition are changing. And I think it's definitely like a, you know, less is not more these days. And I think for women, it's definitely important not to put so much of a focus on that sort of thing. So, I mean, if we had a nutritionist, I think it would more be like making sure you're eating enough and you're fueling properly rather than not. Like, I think on our team, like we had a DS and he was basically just telling us to eat carbs nonstop. He was really good with just making sure that we were eating enough. And if he saw that we weren't eating enough, then he would just, yeah, he would make sure that we were. He would put something on our plates. Like, it's completely the opposite mentality to what you'd expect. But yeah, I think times are definitely changing when it comes to that sort of stuff.
It's kind of wild as well, isn't it? Because if you think about society-wide, now I'm totally generalizing here. I could get butchered and be completely wrong, but I would say society-wide, there's more eating disorders and dysfunctional eating with females than there is with males. But when you get into pro cycling, it seems like eating disorders are much more prevalent in the male peloton than the female peloton.
I don't actually know, actually. I think it's probably a bit of both. I think when you're an athlete, this is a generalization, but you'll always have to some certain degree disordered eating. Not necessarily an eating disorder, but your eating will always be disordered because you're not eating intuitively anymore. You're having to put food into your body when you like certain foods that you don't necessarily want to, but you know that you have to eat this sort of stuff if you want to perform well in a race or you want to get your training done. So you've always got to be consciously thinking about what you're putting into your body. And because of that, I think your eating will never be quite as normal as your regular person who's just got a 9-to-5 office job and they're just snacking whenever they want and they don't really have like a proper plan for dinner. They might just go home and make something or they might just snack on something. It's never intuitive. So I think because of that, all cyclists to a certain extent are thinking about food and their eating is not normal compared to your average person on the street.
I had the wildest podcast interview with Yanni Brakovich. That's a few months ago now.
Oh, I recall the name.
Yeah, he rode on Armstrong's team at Radio Shack. I think he was a young rider in the Tour. He won Critérium de Dauphiné. Like, he's won some big, big races. And Yanni was talking about he won a stage of the Queen stage of Critérium de Dauphiné. It finished in a hilltop finish on Alpe d'Huez. And it was him and Alberto Contador in the final selection. And then he dropped Contador in the last kilometer to win the stage. So you can imagine how well you're climbing, not only to win up Alpe d'Huez, but to drop possibly the greatest climber ever, Alberto Contador. And so he wins up the stage and then he goes into the hotel room straight after the stage and makes himself sick because he thinks he's fat.
Oh my gosh.
And it was such a moment for me going, oh my God, there's such problems in the sport.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. He was in a bad place.
Yeah, you couldn't have like a more bolder like statement of how messed up it is. Like, on the one hand, you are having this accomplishment, winning up the most iconic climb in the world, which is totally just a power to weight display. You would think that's validation that your weight is perfect, that you're the best in the world at this particular narrow discipline at the moment. And then to be going into the hotel after and throwing up your food, I was just like, oh my God, this is so broken on so many levels.
Yeah. Oh.
How far off, we were talking about, you know, you're not sure how the food situation works in male cycling, if they have specific nutritionists or if they're dropped off their food. But is there anything that frustrates you? I'm assuming pay parity is one of them, but is there other areas where if you look at the male to female comparison, it's like, oh my God, we still have a long way to go, or we're not as close as the media is portraying we are between the two sports?
Oh, I'm not really sure, actually. That's quite a tough question. I feel like I'd need time to think about that. There are definitely like huge differences between just the general setup of male versus female teams, I think. Perhaps some of the teams, like the teams that also have male teams attached, like Trek Segafredo. I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I don't even think the likes of Bike Exchange, perhaps the women's team versus the men's team, I don't even think they get quite the same level of support, just because the sponsorship is generally directed towards the male side of the team. And it's almost as if the female team almost gets the hand-me-downs. I'm not entirely sure if that's completely true, but that's almost the perception that I get. And I just think, yeah, the setup of the teams is just not quite as professional and it's not quite as dialed in, which is understandable because I don't think the budgets are nearly as huge. If you look at the likes of, you know, Jumbo-Visma or an Ineos, they have everything dialed in to the nth degree. And that's certainly not the case for the top women's teams. They wouldn't have nearly as many staff, or they wouldn't focus on as many areas as those teams would, just all the marginal gains and that sort of thing. But there isn't anything that like springs to my mind that I would immediately wish that we had. I think, yeah, definitely just a bit more clarity on areas such as nutrition, and also like I don't quite get as much support as I would like for maybe like injury recovery and just general physio and set up on the bike and things like that, because after my injury I was almost left a little bit to my own devices and I went to physio here in Girona and I was organizing my rehabilitation almost by myself, and I'd go for checkups at like a medical center in Girona. But I think if that was a men's team, then perhaps there would be a bit more communication from the team to see how I was going and offer me support. And perhaps I would have a member of the staff that would actually assist me with the rehabilitation and tell me what I should be doing, rather than me figuring it out for myself and going to an external physio and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it seems like the male peloton is almost like a 360 degree level of care now, where they're everything from, you know, strength and conditioning experts to sports psychologists to physios to, you know, alignment experts, bike fit experts. They're all in-house under the same banner. It's not like you have any...
They have everything they could possibly need.
Yeah, because I know even speaking to Ryan Mullen from Bora Hansgrove a couple of weeks ago, and Ryan was saying, like, even, you know, he really enjoyed working with his previous coach, Sebastian Weber, who's, you know, one of the best coaches in the world. And when he moved over to Bora, everything is just self-contained in-house at Bora. You have no opportunity to kind of say, oh, can I keep working with my bike coach, S&C coach, you know, sports psychologist? It's all just the Bora system once you're in there.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think that there's certainly a different mentality with male professional cyclists. They just seem to be a little bit more, I don't know, precious, a bit more uptight, like think maybe a little bit more demanding. They expect a bit more. Whereas with female cyclists, professional cyclists, there tends to be a bit more gratitude and appreciation because the sport has come a long way and there hasn't been resources and this sort of setup in women's cycling for that long. So I think people are a bit more like, wow, this is exciting. Like, we have this and we have that. And I think female cyclists also, they tend to have, again, I'm doing a lot of generalizing on this podcast, but I think because the sport hasn't been that viable as a career for that long, female cyclists tend to have other things that they do as well. So they might study, or they might have a job that they'd like to go back to. They might have a degree behind them that potentially they could go back to at any stage. And also, it seems to be to me that with the young professional cyclists, male cyclists that I meet in Girona, they're suddenly given these big contracts and they haven't studied since they left school. They're not studying it currently. They're just riding their bikes and living on these massive contracts. Whereas young professional women cyclists, I think they would tend to aim to continue their study once they leave high school. And they might study via distance and still have a really good team and a professional contract, but they just tend to not put all their eggs into the one basket and become, I don't know, I think it's just because male cycling is truly professional, whereas I think the women's sport still history is still there. It's quite recent, so people don't quite see it as being so professional, if that makes sense.
And I think that's a double-edged sword as well, because you have a lot of the female riders are actually more interesting to chat to because they're bringing, you know, a higher level of education, but they're also bringing different life sort of perspectives into a conversation. But it's, I think the lads as well, it's because it's so specialized and the World Tour is just getting more and more competitive each year. You can see in races like the Vuelta, they're having to come up with crazier and crazier climbs to split up the race because everyone's level is so high. Like, everyone can do 6 watts per kilo now. And it's like, this is wild. 6 watts per kilo used to go close to a top 10 in the Tour de France, and now good domestiques can do it. So it's almost the lads don't have a chance, I think, to be continuing in education, to doing this other stuff, because the margins between a top rider and dropping out of the World Tour, I think, are razor thin now.
That's true. But I also think you need some balance if you want your lifestyle to be sustainable, because male pro cycling is so cutthroat and they have to go to so many extremes for different variables, whether that's their weight, their training. And I think something's going to give at some point, and if you want to actually be able to sustain your career, then you need some things outside of cycling to actually distract you and to provide that balance. Otherwise, you're just going to reach a breaking point at some stage, I think. I don't think that I could just constantly live, train, solely think about cycling. I just think you'd get to a point where it's just all too much. And also, I think there are actually examples of that in the male peloton, like Tom Dumoulin and I think Leonard Kamner, perhaps. I think he had a break from cycling for a while because it just became all too consuming. And I think it definitely seems to be going that way. I think you definitely need other things outside of the bike to actually be able to maintain your cycling career.
Ella, thank you so much for joining me. I could have chatted all evening. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and we'll chat again soon.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Have you ever wondered how good you could actually be? Each of us has a unique set of circumstances with work, family, and social obligations, but we also want to fulfill our potential in cycling. Okay, maybe you won't ever win the Tour de France, but for most of us, this is what cycling is about. So let us build you the perfect training plan around your lifestyle that's totally unique to you and will help you finally realize your cycling dreams. So whether you're just getting started on the bike or if you're a more seasoned cyclist, we have a suitable coach for you. So why not schedule a call with us and we can have a chat about how we can help you go further than you ever dreamed of in your cycling and fitness goals. Go to roadmancycling.com/contact or pop me an email directly to sarah@roadmancycling.com.